tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden, a woman made from a rib. And if that is true, how come men don't all have one less than women? Do you believe all of that? I do. Except maybe not exactly the way you've heard it put to you most of the time. Did woman really come from man's rib? If so, can you prove it? Was Jonah really in the whale? Was Noah really in the ark? Was Daniel really in the lion's den? And did David really sling that rock a long time ago at Goliath? Or are these just childhood fables and superstitions that have been passed on in hand-me-downs around old ancient Hebrew campfires that became a part of Hebrew literature and ancient prophetic lore? Is the Bible a book that is up to date in this modern space age? A book that really tells us about the origins of human life, about the origins of the universe and all life upon our world as we know it today? Or is it really a collection of myth and fable, tradition of the warnings of some very beleaguered souls who saw violent upheaval and social unrest and domestic change and spoke out against it? There are all sorts of opinions, but very few people seem to believe you can find the proof. As a matter of fact, many clerics tell you can't find the proof. Somebody might say, well, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a being a God. Or somebody says, well, I'm a fatalist. We all have our ideas. We discuss about what we believe about here and the hereafter. And we say, well, I think you ought to have a concept of God. And I'll give you some of these quotations. They may sound like a lot of yours. Christians say, I must accept the idea of there being a God on faith. And many clerics encourage them in that. As a matter of fact, a minister principal of a denominational college said, and I quote his words, the Bible doesn't prove God's existence, but it does reveal it. It's a question of faith. Now, how do you understand those statements in the light of what the Bible does say? Prove me now herewith. That's one statement. Another one which says, prove all things. And this one, very famous scripture out of Romans, the first chapter, which says, and I quote, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth. The original really means hold back. Hold back the truth and unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is evident to them, manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, not in a matter of time, but looking at that which exists, you can prove whether or not there are forces, energies, which do not appear, but which act, which are laws. And God says in His Word, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. So the Bible says you can prove whether or not there is a God, and clerics say you don't need to. Most people say, I can't. But the point is, you cannot demonstrate, you cannot prove, you cannot even get one tangible aspect of the atheistic idea of evolution to really prove out to any rational mind. Now, that sounds rather shocking, I imagine, but most laymen are rather, I think, unaware of the leading, most up-to-the-moment, scientific ideas for the origin of this universe, for the origin of our own solar system and life upon this earth of ours. Another religious leader said not so long ago, there is no proof of anything. Even a scientist works on faith, starting out by believing something is true. Now, man has created gods by the millions, but he can't make a worm in a laboratory. Man does create God in his own image, man's own image, wanting God to be a kind of a divinized father figure, a comfortable old grandfather to call upon in time of need. People have ideas about the goodness inside man. That is God. Or that God is just sort of a life principle. Or that God might have existed, but not in the form that we think of. And by the time a kid is 17 or 18, he's got a full-fledged idea, and he may be able to argue the idea and to talk about it for hours, about what he thinks is God. Now, in the meantime, here is a book which purports to be the word of that God, which says, prove me now herewith, which says you can prove whether or not there is a God, and challenges us to prove it, and says all nations are before him like a drop in a bucket, who says, my purpose shall stand, who says he's working out a great program and a purpose on this world here below this earth, and says it will work out exactly as he has foretold it, and challenges us to demonstrate whether or not he exists. And we say, well, we couldn't care less. So let's get into it and find out what are some of the ideas, both pro and con. You're left really with just two alternatives. Because there is a universe, there is the Milky Way, our own galaxy, there is our solar system and our own solar neighborhood, and there is a world, and there is myriad life forms, interdependent, and actually each one of them, to some degree, depending upon all others, a complete, intricate, carefully and delicately balanced way or web or chain of life on this earth, and nothing really lives or dies to itself, and man exists right in the middle of it all, and here we are, supposedly intelligent creatures, and not really sure yet even about our own origins. Another minister said, you can't prove God's existence because that is something beyond man's reasoning power. Belief comes through faith. A well-known evangelist said, and I quote, it's a very interesting thing that the Bible never once tries to prove the existence of God. Now, what I just read to you from Romans, then I guess this particular evangelist never ran across. It says that the invisible things of Him, His divinity, His Godhead, about the family of God and His program, is discernible by looking at the visible things that His hands have made, the creation here below. A well-known evangelist was speaking to a crowd during a crusade, and a blond man pushed forward and told him, he said, I studied theology, and I couldn't ever find any real evidence that there is a God. Now, that made good newspaper copy for a reporter who overheard it. The crowd muttered a little bit, yeah, I thought that too, and so the evangelist said, didn't you know that nobody, probably patting him on the head, didn't you know that nobody can prove there is a God? You have to accept it on faith. Now, if you can't prove there is a God, how can you be sure? You know, a program I watched on television was asking a leading theologian about, well, now, when man discovers life on another planet, if we ever do, what is that going to do, he asked, to your idea of the traditional Judeo-Christian idea of a God, the way the Bible talks about there being one God in a heaven? And the man began to kind of answer around the periphery of it and finally said, well, no matter what happens and until such a thing happens, I am going to believe because I just believe, and on it went. I believe. I just accept it. It's something that I believe in. Now, having this attitude about broad-minded acceptance of all men's religions is fine. I think we should be broad-minded. I think we should be absolutely of the deepest conviction that everybody has a perfect right to his own religion, whether it's prayer wheels in creeks or whether it's lighting incense and believing that's prayer and that God likes that kind of a smell, or whether it is an Oriental religion or whether it's one of the modern Western religions. I think that some of the new churches that are coming around are rather awe-inspiring, like the new devil worship that's popping up. Wasn't it Time magazine not so long ago had a cover that showed the traditional idea of the devil, complete with horns and all this, and said that even Satan worship is coming back? The little churches are springing up here and there that are allowed under the Constitution of the United States to be a church and to preach and to teach belief in and worship toward the devil. So I am very thankful that freedom of religion is a part of our way of life. But you know, you really can prove whether or not this universe came into existence accidentally or whether it was designed. You can demonstrate it. You can absolutely prove it. But first, you need to know what are the major and the most important scientific arguments about the existence of our entire creation, and how scientific are they? Well, here they are. The beliefs that some people hold are almost unbelievable. The three major theories, now these have been badly battered and they could have been changed in the last few days. I haven't heard within the last few days whether or not some of the scientists still believe in these. And this is one of the problems that bothers me a little, because, you see, if you as the layman dare to disagree and to really argue against one of these theories about the origin of the universe, you might be really looked down upon as being some ignorant layman by a scientist who holds that they're true. But when scientists take off their jackets and roll up their shirts and get busy and tear some of these theories to shattered shards, that's perfectly all right. So I have to apologize by saying these theories I'm about to tell you about, the three major ones for the origin of our entire universe, may have been altered recently. You never know just how long the scientists are going to stick with what they taught the year before.
One question that has bothered man for centuries probably has bothered you too. Average men and great philosophers alike have struggled with this monumental problem. And it's a question that needs answering. The question is, does God exist? And if so, how can you prove it? Whether you feel that organized religion is ritual or reality, the question still remains. The free booklet, Does God Exist?, offers tangible information that will help you answer this timeless question. You'll learn how matter, intelligence, and design prove the literal existence of a creator God. There is no greater question that means so much to your own daily life and peace of mind. Does God exist? Now you can know beyond any doubt. Request your free copy of Does God Exist? Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
A religionist might say, in the beginning, God created. He's reading from Genesis 1:1. And scientists scoff, and they say, oh, ridiculous. What do you mean, in the beginning, God? Well, who made God? Where did God come from? You've heard it all, haven't you? But science says, in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. And everybody says, is that? Well, now that's terrific, because this is science talking now, and we stand in awe of science. When science speaks, man must shut his mouth in absolute awe. Well, the three theories for the origin of the universe you could have come up with yourself. Your kids could have come up with them. They're just not that technical. I'm not saying this happened, but here's what they depict must have occurred. The first one is called the Big Bang Theory. And that proposes that in the beginning, 10 to 15 billion years ago, all matter was condensed into one primeval atom. Now that would be a pretty big atom, wouldn't it? Because we're talking now about all of the bodies in the entirety of the universe, the many, many galaxies of which there may be millions, with trillions of stars, and stars are, after all, you know, our own sun is just an orange dwarf, and most of the stars are bigger than our sun, and there may be millions of planets we know nothing about. We talk mostly about the universe or space, and we think of some of the planets, and our own galaxy, the Milky Way, and our own solar system. But, you know, the Earth is just like one grain of sand in a limitless seashore, bigger than the one that rings Australia, all those particles being other suns and stars and astral bodies of all sizes. And yet they say it was all just one big cube. Well, it could have been round, but it was all just one giant atom. So everybody says, And that's intelligent sounding. That's something that nobody says, yeah, but where'd you get the giant atom? But the Big Bang Theory proposes that it exploded. Now, where that explosive force came from and what caused an explosion to be an explosion instead of an implosion, and why it rushed out instead of in, and how it got there in the first place is rather obscure, but the Big Bang Theory proposes that as energy rushed out into space, it condensed into matter. And out of this matter was formed the universe as we know it. Today it is still flying outward, they say, from the center of that big explosion. The Big Bang Theory presupposes a beginning and an end, a closed, finite universe. In time, the density of the universe will thin out as the galaxies fly apart. When all the energy has been expended, then the universe will die. Now that's given a lot of time because they go back billions of aeons and they put you in the picture right now and say, yes, but that's just a little nothing in the way geologists count time and astronomers, and then eventually the universe will die, which reminds me of Professor Smedley, who was viewing, I believe, an approaching asteroid or was gazing off into the heavens, maybe at Palomar or some great observatory. And he came rushing up to another professor and he says, oh, heavens, he said, that's probably what he did say, come to think of it. Merciful heavens, he said, I've just discovered that in 1 billion years, a giant astral body is going to collide with the sun. Well, his fellow scientist nearly had a heart attack. And he got very excited, was jumping up and down. He said, what was that you said? And he was aghast. He was going to call the newspaper. He said, I said that I have deduced from my observations that in 1 billion years, a giant astral body is going to collide with the Earth and destroy it. He says, oh, thank heavens, I thought you said 1 million years. Now, they reason with vast amounts of time to throw around, you know, and you don't really have to worry about that because nobody's going to be around, as we know, to prove that one way or the other. Whether the world is 4.5 billion years of age or 40.5 billion years of age does not contradict the Bible. Many people think that the Bible says it was all created from the word go in 6 days. Well, there was a recreation and the creation of life on the earth, but there was an original creation of all that we see in outer space, of the entirety of the universe, of the solar system, and of the world itself, in original beauty that might have taken place over a very short period of time, but could have occurred 4.5 billion, 10.5 billion, or 200 billion. Take your pick, because there's a complete indeterminate period of time that is allowed for right in the pages of the Bible. All right, the second theory for the origin of the universe is called the steady state theory. And that's a little more difficult yet for your finite mind and mine, but it goes like this. The universe has no beginning or end. Now, you know, the Bible talks about a God that has no beginning and no end. It talks about a God who always has been and always will be. And this makes scientists angry. They say, you can't have something like that. You've got to understand it in pragmatic, scientific terms. You've got to be able to adjust it to measurement and to weight and to observation. And you've got to be able to test these theories and prove them before you can believe in them. And here you turn to a scientific textbook and they say, in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. Nobody says, well, where'd you guys get that hydrogen atom? They say that the universe, the steady state theory, the second of these three I'm giving you, proposes that the universe had no beginning or end, and space is open and endless, as old galaxies fly outward, and that's kind of dumb because outward is completely irrelevant, and outward from what? To what? If it has no beginning or end, but they're still using terms which really belong only on the Earth. And even some of those are inappropriate, outward being more appropriate certainly than up. As the old galaxies, they say, fly outward, new matter is created, hold it, I may have read that wrong. Oh, it's right there, it says is created in the space between them to form new galaxies. Well, what do you know? Then scientists do believe in the creation. It says new matter is created in the space between them to form new galaxies. The universe expands but never thins out, and this goes on forever. Now, isn't that great? Scientists get all uptight. Not all scientists, because many scientists do believe in the Bible. Believe it or not, some of them do. But many of them who like to think that they are atheists, and I've never met an atheist, especially hanging upside down in a coal mine, adrift at sea in a raft, but I've never been hanging upside down in a coal mine or adrift at sea in a raft. But I've understood that while a lot of people claim atheism, when some horrible trauma comes along, they change their religion in a hurry. A lot of people have a kind of a just-in-case religion anyhow, like the Bill Cosby bit about Noah. You know, it began to rain, just you and me, Lord. You can hear the thunder, and the rain is coming down, and he's been arguing with God. You've heard the routine, very likely. If you haven't, you ought to. And he says, just you and me, Lord, right? Well, a lot of people have a just-in-case religion. You know, we make signs. We go to church a couple times a year. Just in case there's a God up there, I'm going to be on the right side. And, well, they hope it works out that way. So the third theory is an oscillating universe. Now, you could have been ahead of me on this. If you had a big bang and then a steady state, the next is just doing both, see? An oscillating universe which starts with the idea of a big bang and proceeds exactly as the universe operating under that theory would, but eventually it's all going to come back in and be gathered into another giant atom and then explode again and go out. So it kind of operates like your wife's sewing machine and over, except billions and billions of aeons of time.
A nation is only as strong as its families. If our nation were as strong as your family, how strong would it be? And if relationships in your family are not what you would like, where can you go for help? Plain Truth, a publication of understanding, is concerned. Plain Truth brings you helpful articles on how relationships can be strengthened between husband and wife, parents and children, families and neighbors, with interesting and useful information on helping your child enjoy learning at home and school, budgeting and sensible use of credit, preventing teenage depression, household health and safety, homemaking tips for the working mother, achieving full human potential, coping with inflation. Plain Truth emphasizes quality in all aspects of daily living. Let Plain Truth help strengthen your family and nation. Request your free subscription today. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
You know, I don't want you to think that this is an attack on scientists, because, after all, if you tried to approach the question the same way many scientists do, you'd have to come up with the same questions. And a lot of them are pretty well-educated fellows, and a lot of them are pretty special, too. So it's very much a mistake to try to categorize very broadly science, because science is now so technically divided into so many specialized fields that by the time some people submerge after a couple of years of special endeavor, they find out the whole field has gone on and left them so far behind that they've got to just about go back to college to catch up. But, you know, if you presuppose a universe that came into existence naturally, as they say, with resident forces without some interference, you have a lot of questions to answer. Who, what, where, when, how, and why? Now, here are the problems that plague some of these men that I think ought to help us sympathize with anybody who would presuppose the vastness of our awesome universe and our entire solar system and this world and life upon it, this interdependent, technically intricate web of life that we're doing so much today to interfere with and pollute and destroy, you're really stuck with some deep questions. There was a professor, Harlow Shapley, of Harvard University, an astronomer, and he has found out, all right, like a lot of them have, what the universe is made of. They know what the basic building blocks of the universe really are. He can also tell you pretty much how it works, that is, how it operates. But here are his words. So this shows you the problems they have. Quote, but when it comes to why, we're stuck, he confessed. All I can say, still quoting his words, is God only knows, and all the information is classified. Science has found the basic hydrogen atom, he said, but who made the hydrogen atom? Science comes up against some things which are unanswerable as yet. Several other theories about the universe, how it began, but for example, this article that occurred not long ago, a discussion about the single big explosion, the Big Bang theory, in other words, out of a giant atom that blew up one day. Quote, of course, just where this mammoth atom came from is a mystery as great as the creation of the universe. It is as tremendous a thing for a single atom to be created from nothing as it is a universe. Well, I can agree to that. You see, the universe is likened, I heard it put this way one time, to 1 cubic inch of water, like in a little tin capsule, which would be boiled into steam, and then those little tiny droplets, invisible now to the eye when they're spread out very far, would be spread through 40 trillion miles, cubic miles of space, and that represents the size of some of the giant stars, as well as it represents the distance between these stars. Can you think of that, these little droplets? So here's this giant universe out there. All of these problems that people have when they try to tell you that the creation, as we know it today, came into existence without being created. Several years ago, Dr. Jesse L. Greenstein, who was an astrophysicist at Caltech, in Pasadena, California, said in regard to the origin of the universe, and I quote, it is a terrible mystery how matter comes out of nothing. He asked this, could it have been something outside science? We try to stay out of philosophy and theology, but sometimes we are forced to think in bigger terms to go back to something outside science. In fact, many times, people who are not theologians and who admit that they know virtually nothing of theology are forced to go back to something outside of science to explain where the universe came from. Now, one thing I want to make clear right now is that I'm talking about people in a very specialized field, and I'm not saying for one instant that these scientists are men who have researched very carefully through all the pages of the Bible. And they have compared the Old with the New Testament, and they've compared the statements of Christ with the statements of Solomon, they've compared what Genesis says in the story of creation with what it says in Hebrews and elsewhere, and they have technically, intricately, and deliberately studied the Bible, and then they've said, well, it just leaves us short, there isn't really any answer. And then turned to the universe, and to astronomy, and to physics, and to microbiology and comparative embryology and anatomy and so on, all the various phases of evolutionary science, to geology and whatnot, and have said, we have to turn there in despair because we can find no rational answer in the Bible. No, they haven't done that, you see. It's just that they're just as specialized in their field as somebody else may be in his, and they haven't looked into the Bible one way or the other to find out what it really says about the origin of the universe. So remember, science says, and I've quoted it to you, in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. And one day the hydrogen atom exploded, and as these giant particles rapidly rushed outward, they gradually cooled, and then other explosions occurred, and our world was supposed to have been formed by a giant explosion that gradually cooled and so on, and life is supposed to have occurred upon it accidentally. And nobody is supposed to get uptight with science for saying in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. That's supposed to be believable. But when I say in the beginning God created, people say, now wait a minute, who created God? Well, I can say the same thing. Where did you get the giant hydrogen atom? Did it really happen that way? Or is there a rational, logical explanation? You are limited. I am limited. You are limited with your stride and your reach. You are limited with what you can see. Your eye cannot see air. Aren't you thankful? Those people who are hearing right now but cannot see, who are blind, can tell those of us who have the gift, the blessing of eyesight, what it means to live in a world of darkness. If you could see air, if you could see atoms, you'd be blind, because the molecules of air pressing on your eyes would mean that you couldn't see anything. Yet we know air exists. But you're limited in your understanding, too. You're limited in your reach. You're limited in what you can do as a physical human being. Is it just possible that your mind has certain limitations imposed upon it? Write for this booklet, Does God Exist? Can you prove by looking at that which does exist, by looking at tangible laws, not guesswork now, I'm talking about scientifically proved and demonstrated laws which you can see, that you can touch, that you can understand with your own finite mind. Can you prove there is a God in the same way that science proves there is such a thing as an atom? Can you prove there is a God in the same way you can prove there is such a thing as electricity? Can you prove there is a God in the same way you can prove there is such a thing as air? You don't see air, you don't see electricity, you can't see atoms. Yet, we surely understand and know that atoms do exist. Now, this booklet that we'll send you by return mail free of charge shows you these are not guesses, but factual proofs. It's not a weighty booklet. It's a very short, very brief booklet that I imagine you can read in less than 20 minutes. It's just that simple. If you're discussing religion, which oftentimes is not too good an idea, religion isn't always a very exciting subject over dinner, is it? Because it tends to get into arguments and people get a little touchy about religion. But if you want some ammunition, you need to write for the booklet, Does God Exist? All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that. If you would, please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in the Plain Truth plainly even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in the Plain Truth. It is Plain Truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.